Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is your host, Willem Vanderhorst. All right, so it's been a couple of weeks. Last time you've heard a lot of my voice, just trying to, well, not trying, but just explaining what was going on in August. So this time I'm just going to cut it very short, just make a very short and sweet introduction so you can move very fast to the guest that you really want to hear about. And for those who did check out the August foreshadowing, thank you very much for listening and thank you very much for your patience as I'm lining up new guests. And I'm very glad I've confirmed another exciting guest today for the next episode. But more to the point, today we have a very exciting episode in the world of creating a new business and looking for a new job and starting with the area of planning and strategy and marketing communications, but extending all together in how do you look for and how do you hire specialists and experts in sort of their field. And I had a conversation with Frank Striefler. Frank has a really quite illustrious and extensive background in marketing, brand communications, planning, and strategy, and has created a job matching site inspired by dating sites called Siftly, siftly.com. And we had a really great conversation finding out about the platform, where it comes from, what it's about, the challenges he had to face when he was looking for experts in certain fields when he was hiring, as well as challenges when he moved from Germany to the US looking for a new job. And I share some of my own experience looking for a new job in the US and what that looks like, and the future of the job matching site itself. So it's a new idea, and there's a lot of creation and creativity that we're talking about in terms of both coming from the strategy environment as well as creating a new business as well as looking for a new job. So there's quite a lot in the conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And just don't forget, you can find all the other episodes of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast on either your podcasting app if you're using an iPhone, or Stitcher, or Podcast Addict, whatever favorite podcast application you use. All the rest of it is on the main website. That's www.icecreamforeveryone.net. And you can also sign up for the weekly newsletter that I've changed the format of again. So it's just like it's much shorter and sweeter now. I'm calling it the weekly combo. There's just two or three links that seem to be completely unrelated, and I write a short blurb about why I believe they're interesting as well as related. But that's another topic. I'll talk about that a little bit more at the end and in future subsequent episodes. In the meantime, please welcome our guest. I hope you find it as interesting as I enjoyed the conversation with Frank. And there we go.
Thanks for having me, Willem.
Thank you very much for making time. I really appreciate it. I was looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely. Likewise.
Excellent. All right. So now that we're just handling a couple of technical difficulties, and it's just so interesting, the reactions that, or at least I have, I was going to say we have, I don't know what kind of reactions you have to technical difficulties, but like all of a sudden my, you know, just like a little bit stressed out. And I was like, just before this, getting ready, I'm always a little bit sometimes a little bit nervous before a conversation, because you never know exactly how it's going to turn out. And then exactly at the Sod's Law, the worst possible moment, the internet doesn't really work out. But it's part of, I guess, like life's fun stuff that you don't really know what's going to happen. I don't really know where I'm going with this. But anyway, I the reason why I have nothing to do with internet difficulties that I contacted and was really interested in talking, as you know, like the kinds of conversations I really enjoy having are with people that are in the creative industries, and there's a number of different things. Number one, that you have a really quite illustrious career in marketing and advertising that I'd love to find out more about, and love to find out more about the business that you created. So let's just get stuck in. But first things first, I noticed immediately, which I'm sure you've heard before, is that you have a bit of an accent. So I was wondering where you're from.
Yeah, the accent is not faked. I speak the language of love. I'm from Germany.
I can fake my accent being from France. But
nice.
Whereabouts in Germany?
Frank is from Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah? Cool. Excellent. I spent a few days in Frankfurt for a course a couple of years ago, and I went also when I was a teenager. It's a cool place. I like it. But the countryside around is really beautiful.
Yeah, it has its nice pockets. But otherwise, I always say that I wouldn't send friends there on vacation.
Yeah, it's not known for being a pretty city, but I think they've improved the center of town a lot in the past, I don't know how many years.
True, true. It became really beautiful along the river.
Yeah, exactly. And so did you grow up like in the city or in the outskirts or countryside or?
Yeah, originally I'm from the countryside, but studied in Frankfurt, started my career there. So at this point, it feels like home, even though that my hometown was actually outside of Aschaffenburg.
Okay. And so what kind of childhood did you have over there, and what kind of interest did you have that, and what kind of studies did you go into actually?
Gotcha. Gotcha. Growing up on the countryside, in Germany, there was like one thing you did. The number one hobby was football. Number two hobby was football. Number three hobby was football. So, that said, I actually was a competitive swimmer. And I was a state champion and became a lifeguard as well. But that was probably not, that was more for the perks more than necessarily for the competitive nature of it. Mm-hmm. And then quickly I was more interested in the cultural side of Frankfurt and the nightlife than sports.
Yes.
And that's how I kind of like ended up in Frankfurt. And gosh, now I'm walking down on memory lane, uh-huh. But Frankfurt was also kind of like the epicenter of techno. So many, many moons ago, I spent way too much time in clubs.
All right. So the clubbing side, did you also go to, like, I remember back when I was a teenager, I did a few like technivals, you know, like out in warehouses and lost in the forest somewhere, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Frankfurt, for instance, blocked one of the largest tunnels and had raves in there. Yeah. Yeah.
It's definitely down memory lane. That is quite funny. It brings back some memories for me too. Quite interesting. So
yeah, funny enough, my roommates from back then, they're still on the tour. They're like a DJ duo called Mandy.
Oh,
and they're
really?
Still traveling around the world playing house.
Wow. That's quite something. And so did you have a particular, like, in terms of being, so you, would you say you're quite competitive then on the sports side of things? I was just wondering about that.
I don't know whether I would say I'm quite competitive, but I guess since I'm hating to lose at the end, that would be yes. Yeah.
Hmm. And did you have like a bit of a creative streak as well? Or is that something you were interested in? Going towards the creative industry? Is that something that you kind of knew that you're interested in, or how did that come
up? Right. I actually got my bachelor in business, and so advertising was kind of like the most creative side within the business world.
Right.
But being colorblind myself, which is, by the way, a wrong term. Nobody runs around like a black and white TV channel. Mm-hmm. Being colorblind or color insufficient, that kind of like dumped my creative side pretty early. Even though that I think in today's world, being a strategist has never been more fun and more creative than nowadays.
Yes. Yeah. And I absolutely agree. And it's one of the things that particularly interests me in the conversations that I have with people is looking at the whatever the creative process is, whether you're a creator or an artist. But I also really think on the strategy side of things, there is a lot of creativity involved in creating and thinking of models to lead to business, solving challenges and business challenges or communication challenges or brand challenges. So that's a really interesting thing. So did you study? So the studying business, was that in Frankfurt or like were you already in the States then? Or?
Correct. And back in the days, Frankfurt and Hamburg were the two kind of like main cities for advertising agencies.
Mm.
So, and since I guess I was a little bit athletic, I started my career on Adidas and moved then over to Puma before I actually went to the client side. After, with all due respect, and I hope my old client doesn't hear that, after feeling that I've done the client's job practically, I tried to go on that side of the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And found it very, very interesting in terms of like integration, but I also felt it was maybe not quite as exciting than the agency world, with clients, as most agency people know, spending most of their times in meetings. And I actually then came to a realization, it's a massive luxury that strategists can actually spend the majority of time to think about solutions rather than being in meetings. And probably the biggest challenge as a manager I always had was allowing my team to have the time to think and for them not to get sucked into the vampire time the meetings represent.
Yes. What did you find? That's a very interesting topic, and I don't know if there's any magic bullet to this. I don't think there are, but it's a really interesting point because it's a culture, and I think it's interesting to look at it from this lens of here in strategy, but it's probably, I would say, I don't know if you agree, that it's an issue that is bogging down a lot of the business world everywhere to be spending a lot of time in meetings rather than actually getting to have more time to get things done, whatever your job might be.
Right. I mean, I've seen a few things that sound pretty interesting, like for a short period, the president at Chai Day tried to have meetings just for 45 minutes, which I thought was a fantastic idea because you practically can do anything in 45 minutes. You can do in 60 minutes, and then you have 15 minutes to actually cleanse your palate and or check your emails and be more present for the next meeting. I thought that was interesting. Mm. I'm not 100% subscribing to who is it, P&G, who only talks about what's on the agenda. And I like to things to be a little more fluent and more solution oriented. Mm-hmm. So if it takes a detour to get from A to D, then fine with me. And then there was like another agency many, many moons ago in Germany, one of the best agencies back then, who's not around anymore. But they actually had only stand-up table, only standing table. So you could, in conference rooms, you couldn't sit down. And the attitude was like, a meeting shouldn't take longer than you can actually be standing up. So I haven't experienced that firsthand, but I love my stand-up desk. So I was intrigued by that.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. I kind of like the idea of finding external things to reduce the meeting time and get things moving in different directions. Cool.
Exactly.
That's great. And so how did you, or when did you move from Frankfurt to the US, I guess?
The first time...
I don't know if you moved anywhere in between. Sorry to cut you off. But.
Sure. The first time I moved to the US was when I went to Berkeley to get my master's degree as a postgraduate. And then I actually went back to Germany after I got the call from Nike, and I went back to the client side, mm-hmm. which I never regret, because I would argue that Nike is actually potentially more creative than most advertising agencies if you don't limit creativity just to storytelling. Mm-hmm. And then I went to London to be the European marketing director on EA Sports before going back to San Francisco and going to New York, as everybody should do once in their life, working at Berlin Cameron back then when they were like agency of the year, before I then went back to the West Coast, aka Best Coast, to LA to help start Media Arts Lab on a small brand called Apple.
Yes. That's quite the, I mean, as I said at the beginning, that's quite the career. It's really impressive. And it's, I think it's great that you were talking both about being on the client side in marketing and being on the agency side. And you know, there's people who listen to this who might not be in either side or might also be like either working in different industries or also interested in getting into it, which we'll get to later talking about the job side of things. But it's, I'd love to hear your perspective on what kind of differences you think are happening on the client side versus the agency side, and what kind of people might be more interested in either one or the other. What do you think?
Right. I don't know whether I have like a one size fits all answer here, because I think it depends. So I would say most people with a creative side wouldn't be well suited on the client side. Just the other day, a friend of mine gave me a good line
can't recall it exactly verbatim, but many clients don't know actually the difference between good and bad work. So the challenge is not so much anymore to create good work. The challenge is actually to sell good work. But then on the other hand, I think there are a few clients and a few industries that actually challenge the conventions of like what creativity is and truly are actually more creative than advertising agencies whose responsibilities are still kind of like more in the marketing communication side.
Yeah.
But if you're in a more startup environment and you actually have a product, an app and service that is groundbreaking and is challenging the conventions in that category, you probably have more opportunities to be to work on creative business solutions, which maybe is for someone more strategic, even more satisfying than cranking out advertising.
Mm. Yes, absolutely. Well, that's great. Thank you. And that kind of like potentially leads us a little bit to, which is a big topic of conversation. I've talked about this with a few other people, and it comes back in the changes and a lot of changes that are going around the creative industry, the marketing industry, the business strategy side of things with, you know, the big four and the big consulting firms that are acquiring creative and design firms or digital agencies. Everybody, so there's a lot of changes. You know, some of it comes through everybody talking about the ever constant doom of advertising agencies. Meanwhile, there's, you know, Google and Facebook that are growing like crazy and also building up and ramping up their own creative shops internally. What do you think that there's more opportunities for people with a lot of creative streak to go in one direction or another to look for work? Or, yeah, kind of like I'd be interested in having a little bit of your view and your take on all these changes in the industry.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think it's interesting, like how the big consultancies are buying digital shops. And when you look at now at the top 100 agencies, they're actually the top, and under the top 10, you already have five, like the PWCs of the world. And I think that is a bigger threat for agencies, because I think it's easier for the consultancies to add creativity than to add the business acumen to a creative agency. But it depends, of course, what you see your role is.
Mm.
I think where agencies will always be superior is in human truth and storytelling. But if it comes to actually creating business solutions and services and products that make people's life better and change behavior, not just attitudes, I think that's a very different game these days.
Yeah.
And one that maybe new challengers can fight better. And for the longest period, traditional agencies maybe were a little bit too comfortable and confident. And I think the digital agencies these days, now where they have mastered the storytelling side as well, are actually better equipped to lead clients because they can do both. They can create a brand, they can create a vision, they can set a North Star, and then they can actually create experiences on a product service level and a marketing level that actually all makes people's life better versus making people just feel better with advertising.
Mm, that's great. Thank you. I'm wondering, from what you were saying about Nike being a very creative kind of business, and thinking about other businesses that are very known for their innovative designs, innovative products, like, you know, people like Dyson, obviously Apple. I just don't really know this. My assumption is a lot of these products, the designs and everything else, the innovation comes from inside the business rather than external consultants, whoever they might be, or external kind of agencies. Do you have any idea on like how many of these consultants really come up with very new innovative products versus internally within businesses?
I mean, at Nike, back in the days, Nike's R&D was twice as much than the entire category together.
Wow.
So I would give Nike Kitchen, at least back in the days, a lot of credit. In today's world, I would not necessarily bank on one or the other side.
Hmm.
Yes, you see more agencies coming in-house, but I think there is merit in both. There is merit in actually understanding your business needs, because it's not just like what's desirable for the consumer. It's also what's visible for the business. So there is benefit in terms of like being closer to the business. But then there's also the nice thing of, as an agency, as a third party, to come to the table with a bit more of a neutral perspective. I personally think it doesn't need to be either or. If I wear the helmet somewhere, I would probably create a core team that can handle service and product innovation itself, but then have strong relationships with innovation shops and consultancies to actually complement, and where the mantra is best idea wins. Mm. And hopefully the collaboration would be so tight that everybody in the process forgets whose idea it was actually was, because the end product is so much better than the original idea that it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, great. Thank you. You were just talking earlier, and I noted that on one of the articles I came across while just doing a bit of research preparing for the conversation of a challenge you put together called Right Brain, Left Behind. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it for people who don't know.
Sure. Now a very dear friend, Victor Benson, approached me, and it was like right at the time when we were all watching Waiting for Superman. And I just had just became father of some beautiful twins. And
oh, congratulations!
Thank you.
Well, and I mean, then, I don't know how long ago that was, but sorry.
Yeah, still. So everybody kind of like reflects. That's a moment of time you reflect, and where you become pretty conscious about what the future brings for the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from a more social country in Germany, and being in a city where people pay a fortune for private education only because public education is not at the level, and with the budget crisis, we were like naive enough and felt, how about if we actually do a creative innovation challenge, a speed innovation challenge, and we ask the creative community out there, when I say creative community, I mean any and all kind of agencies, to come up with ideas how we could bring back creativity to public schools.
Hmm.
And it was amazing. We had like 300 different ideas from 150 agencies presented, which one of many was produced. So for instance, one idea was, what do we do with abandoned and dormant libraries. And so we actually turned libraries into creative spaces. That was, for instance, one winning idea coming out of that innovation challenge. So I got an idea about crowdsourcing, which also shaped my opinion about crowdsourcing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether we have time for that, but basically net, I think crowdsourcing is fantastic when it comes to consumer pain point. I'm not a big believer in crowdsourcing when you ask your consumer to be your brand steward and your brand architect or your brand designer.
Mm.
But if it comes to tapping the crowd as in your consumer base to identify a pain point, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's also fantastic in terms of like just by odds to strike gold, but you will only ever, in my opinion, get a raw diamond, and you still then have to actually work with a raw diamond and make it shine.
I like the analogy. It's cool. Great. Thank you. All right. That sounds like a really exciting project. It's cool. All right. So, and let's just get into Siftly a little bit. I'd love to hear. So Siftly is the job search platform that you created. I'd love to hear, like, well, just basically what it is, make sure that everybody knows what it is in case they don't know, and sure. And how it all, you know, where it all started, where does it come from?
Sure. I would refer to it more as a job matching site.
A job matching site.
Job search or job board. That's the biggest differentiation, that you actually, that we take the work out of finding work and that you do not need to search. It's like you need to just set your profile up once and you're done. So how it started was practically have experienced a pain point, a massive pain point from both perspectives as a candidate and as a client, as a hiring manager. Mm. As a hiring manager, I felt that the hiring process was too long. And especially in today's world where you don't plan ahead anymore, you don't have the luxury of budgets to plan ahead. It's all based on client immediate business needs. It's all hourly based. So the moment you get actually a position approved, you needed that position weeks, not to say months ago. So I was a bit frustrated in like how long the process takes to get actually candidates. They're like, especially in strategy, they're like some fantastic recruiters who do a fantastic job in helping you to find the best talent out there. But I also wanted to democratize the industry. I didn't want it to be about who you know, but what you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't want it to be about what recruiters you know work with and what recruiters believe in you, or what recruiters you even know about it. And so democratizing the game was one aspect. And then from a candidate perspective, while I would argue that I was pretty well connected back then already, I still missed out on opportunities and I had then sometimes conversation with people and I was like, so how come that I never got a call? And people were like, I thought you work on Apple, you wouldn't be open for any new opportunities. So I thought, and then at the same time, I worked at an agency and I worked on eHarmony before. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, the concept of matching in dating should be able to be applied to job finding as well, not just finding love, but finding jobs. And the combination also with working on TrueCar, which is a lead generator that is actually success-based, and you get not just cold leads, but hot leads, and you get only paid if it actually converts, was something that also inspired the business model behind it. So we only charge a flat fee of $300, and if we don't get you at least 3 to 30 interested and qualified candidates, we don't even charge the client or at least refund the client. And also our no question asked money back guarantee makes it entirely risk free for clients. Mm-hmm. while it's for free for candidates anyway. So in the meantime, we actually created a network of 5,000 recruiters. 1,000 recruiters are roughly on the corporate side. 1,000 recruiters are roughly external recruiters, aka headhunters, and 3,000 recruiters are like amongst the various agencies out there, because we work with all kind of agencies. You name it: full service agency, digital agency, social agency, digital agency, PR agency, brand consultancies. We work with all of them. And of those, so far, we have about 500 recruiters who posted roughly 800 jobs since we launched 1.5 years ago.
Wow. And you started on specifically just just working and looking for people who work in strategy.
Correct. So because of my network, I was approached rather frequently on like whether I can help to find a candidate and whether I know someone would be interested in a new job. And at some point I was like, I need to have that be automized. It takes up too much of my time to give people a favorite. And I was actually more driven by just giving the community a tool. So I created an MVP, a minimum viable product, and put it out there. crossing the fingers, not knowing whether anybody will show up, because in today's world, only because you build it doesn't mean that people show up, right? Yes. And then I had no business in doing that business. I'd never been in recruiting. Uh-huh. It could have been that it flopped, that everybody would have turned around and would have said, I told you, I could have told you, this makes no sense. Or that my guts was right, that there is a better solution. And that there are too many naysayers saying, why do you need Uber? We have cabs. We don't need it. Why Airbnb? We have hotels. We don't need it. So I did. I trusted and believed that I found a better solution, at least for 80% of all job searches out there. I trusted that at least to see whether you even a fit on paper and whether it's worth to talk to each other. There are actually primarily five criteria. It's A, what department are you working on? Like, are you in strategy? Are you in account management? Are you in media? Are you in project management? All departments we're currently serving and we're extending into production next. Then within the department, let's take strategy. What is your role? What is your specialty? Are you a brand consultant? Are you an account planner? Are you a digital planner? Are you a social strategist? We have 15 different specialties. Next thing is category experience. Clients love that we actually allow them to pick category experience. I always encourage clients to pick them as nice to have, not as must have, because I still believe that strategists in general are such fast learners that we can wrap our head around an industry really fast. And I'm a big believer in the is it the Medici effect, where you actually can learn more from other categories than within the category. So a big believer in that. So I encourage clients to not necessarily be stuck with category experience, but then again, there are very intrinsic categories. Automotive, healthcare are categories where previous experience is very beneficial. Beyond that, location, not just where you are not right now, but where you want to move to next, and maybe the biggest one is also salary. So we're actually asking, what is your desired salary? And we're asking clients what the salary budget is. We never publish it. We never communicate what the candidates expect. We never communicate what the client's budget is. But we use that as a hidden criteria in the background. Mm. So the nice thing now is when you come to the table, you don't have that awkward conversation any longer. As in like, oh, we just fell in love with each other. But oh, we just realized we can't afford each other.
Yes.
So that is taken entirely out of the equation. And you can go from a good fit on paper straight into, are you a good fit when it comes to personal fit and cultural fit? And here is where I think the human touch can never be replaced. I think that's where the interview process, regardless on what tools are out there, will probably in the short to midterm not be replaced.
Until robots replace us, probably.
Exactly.
Yes. That's really great to hear you talk about the categories, industry categories you have experience with, because it's one of the points I was interested in talking with you about. I really love the idea of matching and the idea that it's like a more automated. And I really love the inspiration coming from dating sites and even just the clean experience of the website. What I found really interesting is, so I've just recently moved to the US and so I've used it. It's interesting because, and maybe this is just me, like, because I've done so many different things. I'm a bit more of a jack of all trades. So, you know, I started on digital strategy, but I've also worked on other things in personal development before. I've worked across like a number of different categories, but not specializing in any. So even though I agree with you, some categories are particularly useful. You know, if you have pharma or healthcare industry experience or like when that's needed, that's really good. And I also agree with you that it's usually, if you're a good strategist, you're good at like getting around and assimilating a lot of information necessary to be learning and getting into a new category. There was like, I was playing around with the criteria, and then I do get some matches on a regular basis because then I decided that it was probably better to go broad. And also it was true because I wasn't sure where I was moving in the States, for example. So one thing where I was brought is like, well, I'm interested in looking at opportunities from everywhere. Right. And this is one thing that I found interesting is that my maybe because I was used to, or maybe because I'm used to look for a job that way, my automatic go-to was to want to see the opportunities rather than be matched,
probably,
you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I didn't mean to cut you out, but that's probably where we're most disruptive. People are so conditioned to a bad experience that they want to replicate that bad experience.
That's true.
The thing is, you don't need to search. You don't need to look through anything. You set your profile and we send you only leads that are 100% match. So we are sifting through the job leads that you don't need to sift through them. We take that entirely out of equation. And that's why it's for us, it's all about quality, not quantity. So you might have only gotten 2 jobs a year, 5 jobs a year, but they all are 100% matched to your criteria. So what we don't do is, this sort of like fits you. This almost could fit you. This sounds like it should fit you. No, for us, it's all or nothing. Either it's 100% match to your criteria or you don't get a job alert.
Yeah, it's great.
So with us, with other words, there's no spam. And just to address the other aspect,
please.
Which I think I have a pretty strong personal opinion on it because I've been in your shoes. I came as advertising director from Europe at Nike and marketing director from EA Sports and felt I had to start all over again in the States. And I think international experience doesn't get as much valued in the States as we maybe would like it to matter. Mm. And then soon you have an international background. Many clients wonder whether you need green card. And that's a deal breaker because nobody wants to go through the process, the time, the energy, and the costs of it. And they want to make sure you are a permanent green work permit, a green card holder, and have a permanent work visa so that you can, in a high-end fire culture, that you literally can start 2 weeks later. Because we actually create a shortlist. We send the first shortlist after 3 days to our client. And then every week after, we follow up with the clients when a search is actually expired. Originally, we didn't offer a cover letter because I just wanted it to be as simple for candidates as humanly possible. But then actually, Heidi Hackemeyer brought that to my attention, and she really liked the idea of having a cover letter. And she uses a cover letter more than the resumes to actually weed out candidates to see, do they take time to actually personalize it? Do they show some enthusiasm? Do they show some interest? How they pitch themselves? How they talk about themselves? So I strongly now recommend for people on Sifly, if they really want that job, to add a cover letter. If they're kind of like, no foul, no harm, you don't need to include a cover letter if you feel your resume speaks for itself. But if it needs an extra push, and if it's something you really want to land, I would always recommend to take the time to actually include a cover letter. And I think then you wouldn't, with a new feature, I think you wouldn't have the same experience again.
Mm, this is great. I really love this personal experience because people have different ways of approaching recruitment. And now you probably have a lot of experience around that. Like my immediate tendency would be to think that, my CV can speak for itself. And I actually, funny enough, I actually worked in recruitment I had a short stint that I used as a stepping stone to get myself into strategy, which is a whole story in itself. But anyway, and I found in my experience dealing with clients that not that many of them were reading cover letters, but then it really depends. So anyway, but I'd love to hear your perspective, given some of the people listening may well be people looking for jobs in creative industries. Of the experience you've had so far, in addition to cover letters, what else would you think, would you say are really important watch outs for people who are looking for a role?
Right. Let me just make a finer point with a cover letter.
Sure.
I think, yes, clients are not looking on lengthy standard cover letters. But I think if someone actually takes the time to give someone an elevator pitch that is not just recurterating the resume, the job description, but really hits home the point on like why that candidate is the right woman, right man for the job, and highlights experiences and passions and beliefs that qualifies them for that job. I think that makes a big difference. And then to address another thing you said early on that you never heard back from clients. Yes, I must say, if any client listens to that, I wish clients would take more time and give candidates a courtesy and say thanks, but the position is not open any longer. Thanks, but we found someone that who was qualified even better. But we all know how strapped we are for time, yeah, right?
Sure.
We all know how hard it is to do that extra step. So here's how we automize something. We actually offer a thumbs up and thumbs down feature for clients. So if this means clients can actually track who they screened and who didn't pass a sniff test. And if you get a thumbs down, now candidates get the notification, say, sorry, the stars are not aligned. Hopefully we find you a perfect match soon. And if someone gets a thumbs up, that normally means that if it's posted by the HR person, that the hiring manager or internal recruiter, that the hiring manager is getting it in front of him or her, or that actually the hiring manager posted it and considers to give that person a call.
Mm.
Yeah. So then we notify candidates at least and say, hey, good news, you passed the first step.
Great. That sounds like a really great feature. Thank you. Is there anything else that you recommend for people who are like looking for a role or maybe even, you know, some of the more junior, younger people or people who are trying to break into the industry to be noticed? I'm sure there's lots of advice out there, but I'd love to hear what you think is the most valuable.
Sure. I would answer that in two different ways. For the more senior ones, especially on Sifly, I would recommend to actually have a rather tight profile. Geographic preference is different if your heart is not set where to move next. Yeah. And if you're open to move somewhere where you might not think about moving for the right opportunity. I don't think that most people have Portland, for instance, on top of the list, but I know many people would move to Portland for Wyden, right?
Yeah.
So that is a different story. But what I would recommend for people when it comes to roles, the 15 specialties we have, only to pick those that are seriously considered to be an expert. Because if you don't look on paper like an expert in it, the chances are you will not get a call.
Mm.
So I don't want anybody to get their hopes up wrongly. And Sifly is a platform for specialists. Clients come to us because we have the most specialized talent pool, because we only work with agency people. And so far we have 4 departments. And so I think it's important for people to realize you might get fewer leads, but the leads you're getting are exactly what you're looking for. And that's one for more younger candidates. My experience is that most companies don't invest into junior positions in posting jobs. So even though that Sifly is only $300 per post and it's success-based, we don't get many entry-level positions. At least most ones 1 year experience. So to break in, I cannot recommend anything more than making sure whether you can go to a VCU brand center, whether you can do a Miami ad school boot camp, and then firsthand experience, get your internships under your belt and kill it at an internship that company wants you to come back when you graduated. I think that is for me the most successful way in.
Got it. Thank you. And is there anything that's coming up or like either other features you'd love to highlight? And I'd love to know if there's anything coming up that you want to point out that's coming up on Sifly or changing or.
Yes, news. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking. So yes, while we launched in Strategy exclusively 1.5 years ago, and while we currently only do full time, but now we do client services, aka account management, project management, and media. We actually will expand into production next month as well. And then maybe even more important for your listeners, we actually will launch a freelance version. And again, we do the same approach that we launch it exclusively for strategies first. Mm. So we will launch Siftly now, and that will be tailored and catered to freelance strategists and consultants out there.
That sounds pretty exciting, particularly like playing back to the point that you were saying that I completely agree with on some of the pain points when you're a hiring manager when you are a hiring manager on like the change in the pace, like budgets are happening now and yesterday. So to be able to have a solid platform where you can find freelancers and vice versa. I mean, including myself, when I've been working as a freelancer for the past few years, it's always touch and go whether people are thinking about you at the right time or not, whether you're getting the right recruiter give you a call at the right time or not. So having a consistent platform would certainly be really, really helpful in that area. That's great.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. I think there are platforms for creatives out there, mm-hmm. but there's not the same platform for strategists or even the other departments we serve, which I call the underserved departments. And so yeah, I'm excited to launch that. And yeah, we'll hope we have similar success as with a full-time version for it.
Fantastic.
All right, especially great. When you think about like we are in the gig economy, right? Yes,
exactly.
Like, it's anticipated to have like a 40% freelance base by 2020. Mm. And that is a statement that is not even industry specific, but I think the agency world will actually lead the charge, and you see it in production already. So, yes, we think there's a big need for it, and hopefully it will be a great tool for the community.
Great. Sort of just jumping back a tiny bit as well. I was wondering on the matching criteria. Slash, I don't know if it's meant to be a matching criteria slash, I'm going to say algorithm. I don't think it's the right word, but whether you tweak and experiment with it and whether you're looking at adding more different things that you might, or is it like set the way it is and it's working great?
Gotcha. So we actually have different matching criteria for different departments. Mm. So yes, we tweak it constantly. Once it's launched, it's hard to change, right?
Right.
Because look at like strategies. We have over 6,000 strategies on our platform. It's really hard to go back and ask 6,000 people to change a profile because you might have changed a feature. So for us, it's really critical to get it right, or at least make the tweaks in a better stage before too many people are signed up, and iron things out and make sure it really addresses the needs of that specific discipline. But we do have different matching criteria in the different departments to address that.
Got it.
And then we go actually Siftly now will be even more fine-tuned, because my personal belief is that clients need to be a little bit more flexible when it comes to full-time searches. To give you an example, I consciously didn't design Siftly to allow only local clients, because I actually do believe that, candidates, not only local candidates, because I actually do believe that clients do themselves a disfavor by not looking at out-of-town candidates, because our out-of-town candidates, if somebody doesn't offer relocation, might still, for personal reasons, choose to apply.
Yes. Yeah?
There are many people who, for personal reasons, family reasons, lifestyle reasons, whatever other reasons, want to move to a different town and even would rather bite the bullet and move on their own dime than missing the opportunity to live in that city, or are so passionate about that agency that they just want to make the right career move. So we actually consciously don't allow for full-time to pick only local candidates. With freelance, it's a different story, because with freelance, we actually have that feature, because often clients don't have the money to fly people in and house them on top of the freelance fee. Yeah. Mm. So we will allow to actually have local clients only. But then what one big switch we do with Sifly now, the freelance version 2, is with the regular Sifly, you need to be 100% match or you can't apply and you won't be submitted. With Sifly now, we will have two tiers, where one tier is you're a match and you fill all criteria. And then there's tier 2 where you're not necessarily fulfill all criteria, but we still want to submit freelancers because freelancing is such a fast moving business and the decisions are made so quickly. But sometimes maybe clients are not 100% realistic on their needs. And so we want to make sure that they understand who is available there. So if they need to, when they realize, you know what, maybe we need to be flexible. Maybe it's not just on-site. Maybe we need to get the right person. We rather want to give somebody opportunity to work remotely. You know what? Maybe we didn't realize that we actually need to pack a few more dollars on the freelance fee to get the right candidate. So Sifly now will actually have, when it comes to submitting candidates, two groups, those who fit 100% and everybody else.
Got it. That's really interesting. And like actually it was really interesting on the side of the relocation or moving around for a freelancer. What's your perspective in actually for yourself on people working within the industry remotely?
So I think that some projects you can do remotely. Otherwise, having been a creative strategist and worked primarily in creative agencies, I believe strategy is a full contact sport and you need to be in the trenches with a team.
Got it. Thank you. All right. I don't want to make sure I'm conscious of time, so I just want to move on to the next thing. Just a few questions, if I can take the time. I usually end our conversations with our cool down questions. And because it's still the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast and it's, you know, perfect because it's the summer. So do you like ice cream and do you have a favorite flavor?
Oh, my God. I'm so vanilla when it comes to ice cream flavor. Uh-huh. For me, it's less about flavor. For me, it's more like I'm a gelato guy. I don't like ice cream. I love gelato.
Okay. And just remind me, so I know, I'm trying to remember what the distinction is between ice cream and gelato. It's something that it's a little bit lighter and it's made with not full cream. What is it again?
Yeah, gelato is a little bit creamier, but at the same time lighter.
Yeah.
And tends to have much less sugar.
Right. Got it.
And then just the consistency, like a true gelato has a certain temperature. And the moment you put it in the fridge, it actually loses the freezer. It loses the right temperature. So just the texture, the sensation of the texture is completely different.
Right. Okay. This is good. This is great. I hadn't heard that answer before. I mean, but it's something that I talked about. Great. And do you have a particular flavor or you go with whichever?
They are more adventurous. I always like to have my vanilla on the bottom with a waffle. And then I always experience with anything else, whatever the particular ice cream parlor offers and what kind of like tickles my fancies. And I'm one of those annoying people who try all samples before before buying any.
Do you have a shop in Los Angeles that you particularly recommend for anybody who might be in the area?
Yes, there is one in Santa Monica on Main Street, right across Earth Cafe, which is a true Italian gelato place. And the owner comes from Florence, which is arguably even amongst Italian ice cream, the kind of like Mecca.
Fantastic. Well, actually, you know what? I am going to be spending some time in Los Angeles in November for sure. I'll check it out then.
We have to meet in person then.
I would love to. A last question for you, Alex. I really look at different areas of creativity. Is there anything that you do in or out of work that fuels or that you might practice? Like, for example, I'm really interested in writing and reading, obviously, but I do games, role-playing games. Is there anything that you practice or that inspires you that kind of maintains your area or your link with anything to do with creativity?
Gotcha. My answer now would probably be different than if you would have asked me 2 years ago, Sifli has practically eaten up all my time over the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And what is so interesting is if you don't have any more of the resources at your fingertips, you are used from big agencies. I mean, I worked at 180, Chide, Media Arts Lab, InOcean, and you practically have to manage everything. The creativity here is really the partnership, right? Mm-hmm. Like the creativity goes as far as how do we solve the solution? Like, for instance, the frustration I heard from candidates that they don't hear ever anything back. Yeah. To come with a solution of giving clients the opportunity to give thumbs up and thumbs down and have them automize notification. That is for me creativity. Yeah. The notion of finding an illustrator you actually love, whose style you love, but then actually making sure that illustrator understands the nuances of advertising and how the character should look like, or how the symbols representing the different departments should look like, and creating mini briefs for it and pulling inspiration for it is probably the creativity for me. I'm sadly I'm not maybe the most creative person, but maybe there is actually not so much originality anymore. And if you believe that creativity is more about connecting two dots that haven't been connected before, then I would say that is my kind of like creativity.
Fantastic. And my last point, I think I'm just thinking to loop it back to the point that you made at the beginning as we had the conversation. Like, so you have a lot of things going on. I'm sure it's taking a lot of your time. And you mentioned at the beginning the challenge of making sure that you take the time and make sure that your teams take the time to keep exploring, keep doing other things that kind of fuel the research and the work that you that we do as strategists to be able, and the luxury that we have to spend that time to be inspired to find solutions to creative solutions to challenges. How do you keep that in place currently?
Yeah, I think the best answer is here still like the notion of being culturally curious. And lucky enough, we live in LA where you get a nice dose of culture.
Yeah.
And especially, I would argue that LA is going through quite some creative renaissance. It used to be that maybe New York was the true cultural hub in the United States, just as Berlin is the true cultural hub back in Germany. But I think that so many people now have moved to LA for lifestyle reasons, but didn't give up their ambitions and their creativity and their curiosity. So that, granted, with a lot of traffic and a car ride involved, you can dab into everything you possibly can find.
Fantastic. Thank you. Any last words? So just making sure everybody can find the site at Sifli, which is SIFTLY.com, right?
Right, right. So we sift through chopped leads so that you don't need to sift through it. So Sifli.com. And the freelance version will be SiftlyNow.com. Because when you talk about clients, when they look at freelance and look for freelancers and you ask, when do you need him or her by, mm-hmm. you always get the answer. Now, the same answer. We need them now.
Yes, exactly. All right, fantastic. I thank you so much for your time, Frank. It was a pleasure talking with you.
No, thanks for your time.
Excellent. All right, bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right, already another episode. Already we're like close to the end of the summer. Not that that has to do anything, because you may well be listening to this much later in the middle of autumn, fall, winter, whatever it is. But I really enjoyed the conversation with Frank. I thought it was really fascinating, and I'm definitely going to catch up with him and have a bit of a further conversation about strategy and job hunting. Whenever I visit LA, I hope to be able to catch him for a coffee or a gelato, go figure. But otherwise, in the meantime, don't forget, like, you can leave a review for the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can go into your iPhone podcast app, or you can go into Apple Podcasts, rather, that changed from iTunes. It's still iTunes, but it's like officially Apple Podcasts. It makes a hell of a difference if you leave a review and it allows other people to find the show, particularly if you enjoy it, or just quite simply, if you've enjoyed this episode, just, you know, share to a friend, forward to a friend of yours. You can also give me feedback that always encourages me on Twitter. That's ICVillem, letters I-N-C, and then Villem, W-I-L-L-E-M. You can send me an email at villem@icecreamforeveryone.net. That's, again, W-I-L-L-E-M at icecreamforeveryone.net. You can like and leave a comment on the Facebook page. So if you just dial in or type in Ice Cream for Everyone, and there's a games and I put it under Games and Toys. I'm trying to find the right category for this thing. But anyway, that's about it for now. We're coming back in a couple of weeks with a very exciting episode. If all goes to plan, I have a really great guest I'm looking forward to, a game designer that I love the work of. And so very much on that very soon. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your evening, day, morning, afternoon, whatever time it is, whenever you're listening to this. Thank you. Bye.